Hey there, I'm Catalina Villegas. I'm the host of Rolly's Experts Explain Everything podcast. Rolly is the platform where journalists find experts for their stories. As a journalist myself, I love to find fascinating people on Rolly, experts with deep knowledge and insight that can answer all of the questions I've ever had about their field. So today we are chatting with Ambassador Carmen Lomelin. She is the principal at Lomelin Global Partners. From 2009 to 2014, she served as the U.S. Permanent Representative to the Organization of American States and the National Coordinator for the Presidential Level Summit of the Americas. Before leading the U.S. permanent mission to the OAS, Ambassador Lomelin was the Executive Secretary of the Inter-American Commission of Women for the OAS. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us.
It's such a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for the invitation.
I'm very excited about this interview, particularly not just because of your incredible background and all the amazing work you've done on behalf of women, you know, at very, very high levels, but because I also worked at the Organization of American States, particularly for the mission of Colombia back many, many years ago. So this is, it feels like a homecoming in some way.
Catalina, you can never leave the OAS. Just remember that.
That is so true. So Ambassador, I would love to hear from you. What inspired you to pursue a career in diplomacy and international relations? And how did you go about getting there?
My path to eventually being an ambassador took a lot of detours. I did not start off, I'm going to be a diplomat or I want to work in foreign policy. No, I grew up in a small steel town half hour outside of Chicago. So immigrant community, you know, so after high school, I had to work to support my family. So I was, you know, working and going to school full time and going and working at the same time. So it took me quite a while to get both my undergraduate and my MBA. I did get an MBA in international business out of curiosity and interest more than anything else. At that time, I was working for a domestic steel company. So even my bosses said, why are you focusing on international? Our company is domestic. Well, fast forward, I ended up leaving the steel company because I was a Latina in a white man's world and I was going absolutely nowhere. So I went to work for MALDEF, Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund, and then got exposed to a lot of the issues impacting the women, particularly the women, the Latinas in Chicago, and the women migrants. And that's where I really started getting involved and interested in those gender issues and women's issues and helping women advance. It would break my heart to see these, you know, 15-year-old girls on the bus and they're already pregnant and they're dropping out of school. So that sparked my interest to move forward. You know, sometimes you have these aha moments. I realized that in order to create change, you really have to be sitting at the table where the decisions are being made. Therefore, I got involved politically. I got involved in campaigns at the city level, the state level, and kept being involved and again, working on issues for Latina women in Chicago. And then I got involved with the Clinton campaign. And, you know, to make a very long story short, when President Clinton came into office, I was able to come on here to Washington to serve in his administration. The path that eventually led me to the OAS, I was working at the White House Women's Office, where we worked on just a range of issues for women domestically. And, you know, I get a call from, ended up being my predecessor, who used to head up the Women's Commission at the OAS. I'm leaving. I really think you should apply for this job. I said, no, I don't want to get pigeonholed doing women's stuff. She said, no, it's a great job. You'll travel all over Latin America and you'll really develop some expertise. So I figured, hey, why not? That is how I got into the international piece. The White House gave me the opportunity to learn about gender. And 12 years at the OAS was a crash course, an absolute crash course in diplomacy and the world of multilateral diplomacy. But being there, you know, seeing how things were done from the bottom up gave me real insights into the work of the OAS. And frankly, I love multilateral work, probably a little disjointed, but I just love that work. It's just interesting. Like I said, I didn't plan on it. I don't know. And I tell this to young people because I talk to them a lot. I don't know at what point in my early career I became aware of the State Department. It must have been during the Nixon administration and Kissinger bouncing around all over the world when it was like all of a sudden, oh, wow, this sounds really interesting. So, and I know there are so many others like me that had no idea what this world was all about or that it even existed.
It's a fascinating world. I know that I was definitely very drawn to it. I remember my my time at the OAS very, very fondly. It was fascinating to see all the different players and to see all the different countries try and collaborate and get to these kind of big ideas and big goals that we have for our hemisphere. It was absolutely fascinating. I wonder for you, you know, you had a very special role in a very big task, right? Which as the U.S. permanent representative, you had, I'm sure, some big challenges when you were trying to promote U.S. interests in the hemisphere. What were some of those challenges? Tell me about that.
Certainly, like I said, multilateral work can be extremely challenging because basically you're juggling the agendas of 34 countries while focusing on ensuring the agenda of your government, i.e. the United States, move forward. And I was there at some very interesting times. They started when I was there at the Secretariat with the rise of Chavez and Chavismo, and then the creation of the ALBA group. And this real anti-American sentiment. And of course, the issue of all issues that they were always on top of, Cuba. This was before President Obama reestablished relations. There was a lot of tension, and it really came to a head at the Summit of the Americas in Cartagena. The Venezuelans organized everybody to just go after the United States because we kept insisting, because Maduro kept saying, we can have Raúl Castro here in an hour. You know, we just go pick him up and he can come in. Well, our position, that of the United States, had always been the summit in the America is for the democracies of the hemisphere. Cuba is not a democracy. So there was a lot of tension, a lot of back and forth. And, you know, the Nicolás Maduro and his interesting rhetoric. Ay, usted es la representante del imperio. You are the representative of the empire. Yeah, that sounds good. So it was very complicated. They organized themselves really well before any of these meetings. Of course, as you well know, Catalina, you sit down and discuss what are your options, how are you going to develop your policy, etc. So you had the Central Americans, you had the South Americans, you had the ALBA group, and then there was the United States and Canada. And so we didn't belong to any other group except the two of us. So people came in already with pre-agreed upon policy positions. So that got complicated trying to move the U.S. agenda. So what we figured out that we needed to do was work with our allies so they bring the policy positions to the floor, not the United States. So it got to be a real juggling act.
It definitely sounds like it. And for those who may not know, can you just give them a little bit of an explanation on the ALBA group and what that is?
The ALBA is the Alianza Bolivariana de las Americas. It's the alliance of the Bolivarian countries. It's Venezuela, Nicaragua, Bolivia, Ecuador. Yeah, they were very well organized. And their one goal was to mess up with the United States. So, you know, they were very active in that. But that being said, I had worked when I was at the commission, at the Women's Commission, with Venezuela. Maduro had provided support for some work that we were doing on gender. So I think if I were to get him alone, we might be able to talk. We wouldn't agree on anything, but, you know, that's how you have to work some of this. It's more, you know, conversations and let's have lunch, un cafecito, por favor. And you just move forward and do what you have to do.
And that actually gets me to my next question. One of your really big roles there was on behalf of women and advocating for women. Tell me about the progress that we have made or have not made in the time since you've left the OAS.
Catalina, it's a mixed bag. There are areas where women have really advanced. There are areas where they have not at all. There has been a really dramatic growth in the number of civil society organizations, women's organizations that have organized. Some of the best I've seen are in Argentina, and in Mexico. I mean, they really got their act together and were able to create some changes. For example, women's reproductive health, which is complicated because of all the nuances of women's health. But they got some policies across, and now in Mexico City, the last statistic I saw was most women have 1.5 children or 2.5 children. It's not like the 6 or 7 kids like before. So that's been a change. There's also been a change in the political landscape. In that you're seeing more and more women running for office at all levels. As you well know, they've had women presidents, Dilma Rousseff in Brazil, Cristina Fernandez twice in Argentina, Violeta Chamorro, Laura Chinchilla. You know, they've really made a lot of progress there. In Mexico, you may have a woman president when all is said and done after the next election. So there has been a lot of moving forward. And then I call this the Bachelet, who another president, the Bachelet influence. When she became president of Chile, she announced that there would be parity in all her appointments, 50-50, men and women. At first, people were horrified. And, you know, what was going to happen? Chile's going to fall apart. They did extraordinarily well. And it became almost a rallying cry for the other women ministers that, yes, you can have that. You can bring in more women and have them, you know, share the responsibilities of policymaking for people because their styles are so different. So you saw a lot of that. Challenges, some of horrible challenges, extreme poverty. I was recently in El Salvador. I'm working on a project down there, and San Salvador looked beautiful. It was clean. You didn't feel like you were in San Salvador. You felt like you didn't see any you know, gangs or anything. This particular university is an hour outside of El Salvador. Then once you started driving outside of the capital, then you really started seeing the extreme poverty, and then you understand por eso se va la gente. This is why people leave. Because they don't have opportunities. There's also a lot of gender-based violence. The drug cartels use these women as mules, and if they don't comply, they kill them. I mean, there's been a rash of feminicides throughout the region, so that's still horrible. And then, of course, there's a pervasive machismo that's still there in Latin America. This feeling that men are so much better than women. Men should be telling women what to do. I'll give you a couple of examples. When I first got to the Women's Commission at the OAS, I remember going and introducing myself to a couple of ambassadors. Ah, nice to meet you. My wife is over there. Like, what do I want to do with his wife? But he saw, she's with the Women's Commission. She should be talking to my wife. Another example, and this is something, you know, we may touch on later on. We worked a lot on the issue of trafficking in persons. We brought it to the OAS, my team and I. And we were giving a presentation at the one of the OAS meetings, and you know, just an updating on where we were on the issue of trafficking. And one representative of one of the member states asked for the mic, and he said, "Mrs. Lomelin, I have a question: Is the CIM, the Commission, trying to get rid of prostitution? Because you must understand that prostitution is good for our economies." How do you respond? When, you know, I know what was going through my head that I couldn't say, but.
What did you say?
Title of our report is The Elimination of Trafficking in Women and Children for the Purposes of Sexual Exploitation. We are not discussing prostitution. And you just, but a week later, the guy was gone from the mission. They got after him for what he said, which is actually pretty dumb because it was being recorded.
It sounds so incredibly challenging because I imagine there's so many interests to balance. And one wrong word, I imagine, can trigger a lot of issues between different countries. So hats off to you. It must have been a whole lot of pressure, right? To be the person that all of that weight sits on you.
Yes and no. Certainly when I was at the State Department, I had the support of the department. I mean, I had a very professional staff that had been, I'm sure you know many of them, that had been working on these issues for most of their careers. And the support was really incredible. sometimes at the OAS, when I was at the commission, things got a little complicated. As I mentioned, the era of machismo and then anti-American sentiments, of course, reflected on me because they didn't see me as Latina. They saw me as a gringa. And I remember somebody, you don't know what a Latina, don't know what a gringa. I said, no, I'm not. Got caught into that those feelings of she's American, so we don't like her. So it was tough. And the women ministers, God bless them, they're smart as all get out, and they're tough as nails, and they're good at what they do. But it was fascinating. It's an experience that I would do all over again because I learned so much, so very much, not only about the issues but about the people of Latin America.
And, you know, speaking of the State Department and Latinos, in fiscal year 2019, minority representation in the Senior Foreign Service was very low, specifically for Hispanics, around 5%. And I'm sure that the number of actual ambassadors that are Hispanic is way lower than that. Talk to me a little bit about that, the challenge of getting Latinos into Foreign Service.
You know, it's not easy. First of all, the State Department's personnel system is very complicated. You have the Foreign Service, you have the Civil Service, and you have the political appointees. In the space of political appointees, you do have more numbers of Latinos and Latinas in ambassador positions, like myself, Mari Carmen Aponte, Liliana Ayala. I mean, there are quite a few that attain those positions. With the career Foreign Service, it's a lot harder because of the processes they go through. Just getting into the service is a process. And it's something that, you know, we're not going to change the numbers until we start building the bench, until we start getting the younger people coming into the bottom, because they're not going to come in at the top. Even if they're a political appointee, unless you've been around for a long time, you're not going to come in at the top. So they have to know what is the Foreign Service, how do you get in? You know, and there's another piece that people don't tell you is that the State Department is not the only agency that has foreign affairs or foreign policy positions. You've got the development agencies, you've got the Export-Import Bank, all the others, the Foreign Agricultural Service. So what I think all of us have to do, first of all, the national organizations really need to push on the issue of Latinos in the State Department and foreign policy. They're great on the domestic side. Not so much on the foreign policy side because, you know, their focus has been domestic and other issues. Number two, people that are in those positions, they have to start mentoring young people. They have to reach out. They have to, okay, this is the way it's done. I'm really proud of this young man. I had a young man who had gotten his PhD in one of Cambridge University in London. I mean, the kid is just really smart, Mexican/Mexican-American. And he came in. The people that work for me knew that of my particular interest in promoting Latinos. So they brought him on as an intern. The young man was absolutely brilliant. After his internship was over and he got his PhD, we figured out a way to keep him. And he ended up rising and rising and rising. He went from the State Department to the Foreign Agricultural Service. And now he is the Deputy Director of the Africa Bureau at the Office of the United States Trade Representative. So he just needed a little push, a little guidance. This is how you do it. And the whole issue of knowing what you're talking about, being networking, but not networking, going hanging out in a bar, networking with people that are going to help your career, talking to the experts like you're doing now, speaking with, when you can, to the senior people at the State Department and find out what is it that they're looking for. As, despite my frustrations and, you know, I'm very frustrated with the current Secretary of State because he did promise the appointment of a lot of Latinos, which hasn't quite happened. But I understand the times that we're in. We still need to do whatever we can to showcase the international piece of the foreign government, or rather from the United States government. And you have to start when they're little kids. By the time they're juniors and seniors in high school, they're already going in a different direction. You talk with the little ones, you expose them to travel, you expose them to the world, and little by little, they start getting influenced. I went to speak at when I was an ambassador, at what had been at that time my former high school in Chicago, bright young women, and I'm talking about everything that the State Department does. And what I said, whatever it is you're interested in, you will find it at the State Department, whether it's mathematics or economics or security or public affairs and public relations. So, you know, they were really interested. So afterwards, one of the young women comes up to me and she says, "You have just decided for me what I'm going to do for the rest of my life." Like, wow. But then it's the exposure. And I think, you know, we again, like in baseball, you need to build your bench. You have to start where you've got the people coming in at the lower levels so they gain the experience. And if you're looking at the political side, you do what you have to do politically to get your appointments. Now, with mine was a little different because as an international civil servant at the OAS, I could not get involved politically. When President Obama won as president, I was asked to come to the White House, and they ended up offering me this position. And why? Not because of the political piece, but because of my experience and expertise at the OAS.
Ambassador, tell us about some of the important aspects of diplomacy that you had to implement and work on every single day.
You know, Catalina, one of the, from my perspective, one of the most important aspects of the work that you do as a diplomat, and actually anybody doing business internationally, is you have to develop the relationship. You have to develop with the friendship. You don't go in and say, "Hello, nice to meet you," and start doing business. No, you go in and you, "How's your family? Tell me about your daughter. Oh, I understand your daughter wants to go to college. Tell me more about it." And so you develop a comfort level. And then little by little, you introduce the business side. Once they get to know you, once they understand that you understand where they're coming from and you respect not only them, but their culture, it'll make the negotiations a lot easier. I had an interesting experience. As you know, I'm on the both of the boards of VCU, the university, and the healthcare system. And one of the issues I've been pushing is the whole issue of outreach to the Latino community, which is growing big time in Virginia. And the president of the university said, "Oh, you know, we've got a lot of Spanish speakers that we're sending out." And I went, "Oh," raised my hand. "That's great. Congratulations. But you need more than Spanish speakers. You need people with the cultural sensitivity, the cultural knowledge to understand why is it that a parent or parents don't want to send their kids on campus? Why? It's not because they don't want their kids to get educated. It's because it's a different world and they don't know what it's like. It's, you know, and especially after COVID, so many of the young people had to go back and to work and help their families. You need to understand where they're coming from. You need to meet people where they are."
That is so true. And you know, Ambassador, it's so interesting that you say that because I see that in my field as well. When I go out to do a story on someone, to do a story on a mother who has five kids, or to do a story on an undocumented person, they always invite me into their home. And the first thing is, "What can I get you? Here, have some food. Here, drink some water. You know, tell me about you. Where are you from? Where did you grow up?" And there's this entire process of getting to know the person and building rapport. So then that person feels comfortable to share with you their story.
Absolutely. You know what? I was educated by Franciscans, and the Franciscans, as you know, are all about community. One of the things that the nuns always stressed is you need to anticipate the needs of the other. You should not wait for them to ask. You should already have the sensitivity. You should have already done your homework to know, okay, this, of course, we wanted, you know, want to work on these policies, but what else does this person need as a person? So, you know, it takes time. It's not fast. And sometimes, you know, especially in the business community, some of the people that do business don't quite get it. And I've seen some stuff where you just kind of roll your eyes. But, you know, we have to keep working at it.
Definitely do. And that those cultural sensitivities are so incredibly important. And that's why having more diversity within the State Department is probably really important. Ambassador, I have just kind of one last question for you. You know, I feel like this is such an unexplored and uncharted world for many people. Do you have any really interesting or fun anecdotes of your time as an ambassador? Something you can share with us?
It was one of my first trips as ambassador, and it was we were in Cali, in Colombia. You work with the embassy; they pick you up, they walk you through the diplomatic area, so you don't have to sit around and wait to go through customs and all. So I'm waiting for my luggage, and this young guy keeps staring at me and staring at me. And he comes over and he says, "Can I ask you a question? Are you American?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Are you somebody important?" I started laughing. I said, "My family thinks I am." He goes, "Man, I don't know if you noticed, but you're surrounded by people with guns." I had not noticed. Like, oh my God. And then something similar happened again in Colombia. I was at a big women's meeting, and we were going into the hotel rooms, and they had put us on the floor where you had to go through a door and all that. So I was walking with one of my colleagues, and I hear somebody walking behind us. And I just like, oh man, what the heck? And I would stop. That person would stop. So I kind of looked around a little bit, and I see this very short little person. I said, okay, man, I'm a lot bigger than he is. I can bring him down. So I turned around and said, in Spanish, what do you want? And why are you following us? Please, please, I police. I said, oh, niño, ¿por qué no dijiste? He's like, I police, okay. he was really young, too. He was too young to be a policeman, actually. But it was one of these things where you go, oh, man, I felt so stupid. Because I probably scared the heck out of that kid.
But that's all part of it, right? That's all part of these experiences.
Yeah, I have had some interesting experiences. And it's I will always treasure my time, not only at the State Department, but at the OAS.
Ambassador Carmen Lomelín, Principal at Lomelín Global Partners, thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you for the invitation. Bye-bye.
You can find hundreds of other experts by visiting roly.ai, and you can connect with us on social media. I'm Catalina Villegas. Until next time.